Good morning. We're honored to have as guest today Eugene Bradley, who is a longtime KABU volunteer. He served on the KABU board from 1998 to 2006 when he had terms as board chair and treasurer. He has been a member of the KABU Finance Committee since 1998 and has volunteered in numerous capacities over the years. Thanks for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour, Gene.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the Old Mole. What an honor.
Well, let's start by providing a brief overview of KABU's history. Then we can talk about your involvement with KABU and how the recent Corporation for Public Broadcasting cuts are part of a longer pattern of efforts to curtail free speech radio. KABU's origins followed on the heels of California activists who established KPFA Pacifica in 1949 as the first non-commercial listener-supported First Amendment community radio. In the mid-1960s, a few dozen volunteers in Portland launched KABU, which introduced the area to a range of classical jazz, folk, and alternative rock music, as well as a variety of political guests, such as the Berrigan Brothers and Joan Baez. And over the years, KABU expanded its reach with more powerful transmitters, expanded its volunteer corps and programming, and in 1982 moved to its current building, which it now owns. Gene, when I first moved to Portland in 1995, someone told me about KABU, and it immediately became my main radio source. And I still think it makes a difference in the quality of life here, having access to alternative political and music programming. And it's so important for Portland's progressive organizing. This is reflected in the recent Willamette Week poll that ranked KABU as the area's favorite radio station. How did you first get involved in KABU?
Well, I came to Portland in 1976, and I have to admit I didn't listen to KABU very much. I used to see the Listener Guide, which would be a newspaper that came out once a month that was in all the new free newspaper rack. And I had a couple of friends at work who had shows on KABU, usually in the middle of the night. But one of my friends, who is the president of the local letter carriers union, we were sitting across the table one day doing business, and he said, have you ever thought about coming into KABU? And I said, well, I don't know. What's that about? He said, well, we're really looking for board members. And I had had some experiences doing citizen budget review for the Portland School District for about 5 years. So I thought I knew a lot about numbers, mistaken in that. But so I came down to KABU and looked around and stuff. And I thought, well, this is someplace I can make a contribution. So I talked to people about running for the board. And they said, well, you have to do a little volunteering first, so people know you're serious. So I did a janitorial shift for on Thursdays for about 3 months, and they started to think I was probably going to show up again. So I put in my application, and I was elected in October 1998, along with Shahid Hamid, and I think Celeste Carey was reelected that year. So people I've traveled with for the last show 25 years or so, but just before the election, I think it was August of 1998, I went to a KABU board meeting just to find out what it might be like to be involved in that. And they spent most of the meeting talking about they'd lost their CPB funding, and they thought they would have enough money in their line of credit at the bank to get them through until the pledge drive in the fall. They were counting on the Grateful Dead Marathon to save them once again. And I was like, well, this is certainly a different hand to draw to. So I joined the board, and luckily they had somehow talked Alan Bailey, who had been a manager in the early 90s, to come back with a specific goal of trying to make an application to restore CPB funding. And just a short comment that when I joined, KABU had 3,485 members, and we had the good fortune of getting a grant from the Meyer Foundation, a capacity building grant to hire a membership director part-time, and that was Arthur Davis. And Alan and Arthur and a very active board and a dedicated staff managed to get the membership up, I think in 2005, to 6,600 people, 6,600 KABU members. So almost doubling the number of membership. In fact, they got to 5,000 in about 2 years. And our pitch at the time to the community was, we have to be independent. If we're going to do the work that KABU does, to be independent, to tell the truth, to represent views you're not going to hear on CBS or NBC. We have to have financial independence, and we need you to support this. And the community responded incredibly with incredible enthusiasm. We just, we had more and more volunteers, we had more and more listeners, and we had a supporting membership. And when things arose over the years that I was on the board, when, we needed a new transmitter, we could go and ask people, and they would make really incredible, generous donations to underwrite that. So community support has been constant. And whenever we've really been in touch with our membership and our listenership and our communities, and whenever we've gone and said, here's our plan, we need your help, and it was a plan that made sense, they've stepped up again and again and again and again. And it's been one of the most amazing experiences of my life to be involved with KBOO, because you just don't get this in ordinary life, the dedication of a whole community to keep something going.
Well, that sense of community and people stepping up, I mean, I've witnessed that many times as a volunteer at KBOO. I mean, what is your sense of why KBOO is so special and important to so many area residents?
Well, I think first it's the whole history of KBOO, the KBOO story. I mean, it was started by a bunch of volunteers. They were in a basement downtown in a law office, and it's just been chapter after chapter after chapter of just when you think it can't possibly work, they figured out a way to make it work. And literally, generations of Portlanders and generations of Oregonians, people in Washington, people at Doubt the Gorge, people at the beach, have come in and done work and contributed and kept it going. And it is so important. One of the things that helped us, 1998 to 2006 or whatever, was the fact, sounds strange, the Iraq War. The Iraq War broke out, 9/11 and all that stuff. And KBOO was literally the only unembedded source of news that people could get. And I don't mean to disparage other media outlets that we know and love, but we were the only people. KBOO was the only place that were putting people on the air, ask questions and tell the truth. And people just, KBOO became a thing. And it was that way during the Timber Wars. It was that way during the Trojan nuclear plant trip, long journey. It's been that way again and again. Police accountability, so many issues that are important to Portlanders and have been over the decades. KBOO has been the one where you're going to find out people talking about that. And people like Celeste Carey and Shahid, and I can't even name so many names, have been drivers in that. People on the old mole, certainly. People on the old mole.
And that source of alternative information, well, when I say alternative, I mean truthful information, honest information that's missing from the mainstream corporate media is still important, although KBOO has more, I wouldn't say competition, but associates now with social media. So there are many great podcasters, YouTubers out there that provide important alternative information that, along with KBOO, has helped to poke holes in the Israel narrative, for example, which the corporate media constantly repeats and has been disguising the genocide in Gaza. So we depend on KBOO, its broadcasting of Democracy Now!, and other kinds of programming to get that kind of important alternative information. And you also mentioned this kind of democratic participation. There have been many times when KBOO has faced challenges, whether from misguided board leadership or community efforts to support staff efforts to unionize. But the pandemic, I mean, what role do you think the pandemic has played as another recent watershed for KBOO and another challenge that we're still feeling at KBOO?
I think the pandemic has changed just about everything in our lives. But at KBOO, it certainly has had a huge effect. Prior to the pandemic, there were just a lot of people in that building and down on 8th Avenue all the time doing volunteer work, not only on the air, but also putting together the program guide and getting the mailings ready. There were just always people at KBOO. You could walk in day or night, and there can be people in the hallways doing something. And people had a sense of working together, a sense of comradeship, if you will. During pledge drives, people would come in and answer the phones, or bring food in from restaurants or whatever. There was just a lot of ways to participate in KBOO. when we had to close the station down, one of the amazing things about when the station had to be closed and people had to work remotely is how many programmers, like 85% of the programmers, learned how to do their shows remotely. That's a mind-boggling number if you've ever met some cable programmers. No names, but it was incredible. The program director at the time did just an amazing job of setting people up for training, getting that done. But the fact is, even today, there's no role for people to come in and play in the building at KABU. And I think that has changed the real dynamic of the community. And there's, because of staffing, and staffing has perennially been a problem at KABU. There's no one there answering the phone if you call up right now. You might get leave a message and somebody will get back to you. And my experience is they usually do, but you can't just talk to somebody. You can't say, "Hey, I want to talk to Chris Merrick in programming about a program I heard," or call Kathleen Stevenson and ask her, "Who was that person who was just on Sluss and Cecil show?" So that's changed everything. And I think that we've sort of lost contact with a lot of people. A lot of people have lost their personal ties to KABU. And I think that's a real challenge. And I know that other organizations and other civic places, gathering places, have really been affected by that. And that's one of the big challenges going forward. And of course, it's keeping up with the changing face of the media in terms of what equipment do you need to do your job. I mean, podcasts, people with phones now can, make videos and all kinds of things. So it's rapidly changing, but how do we pull that back in to something that plays a role in the community as far as truth telling and information sharing and just communicating?
Right, especially in terms of programming at the local level, providing key information about what's happening in the city, the region, as well as the nation and world. And we should talk about the Corporation of Public Broadcasting cuts. I think most listeners, KABU listeners, know about this, that Trump's Republican Congress recently cut all funding to the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, and this has devastated community radio stations across the country. KABU's budget, which has always been bare bones, you could probably testify to that, Gene. We've never been able to fund enough staff members or get the latest equipment. There's always challenges in the aging building, plumbing issues, et cetera, that need expensive attention. But you've been involved on the finance committee and on the board and other times in KABU's history when CPB funding was cut. And can you tell us what KABU did in those years to function without it? And more generally, about the impact of CPB money on KABU's budget over the last decades?
Yeah, KABU, since I've been looking at budgets, 1999, I guess, the CPB contribution is usually run about 8 to 10% of the budget, of our operating budget, paying salaries and things like that. But it's been an important source. Specifically, when we lost that money in 1998 because we didn't conform with the new standards that CPB was trying to impose on the stations that got grants from them to please the new Republican majority in the House of Representatives, led by Newt Gingrich, if you remember that character. At that time, we thought, okay, how can we do this? We have to grow our membership. And so we really worked hard. And over the 4 or 5 years, we became self-sufficient. And that was the message that the board and KABU as a whole was really pressing. We need to be self-sufficient. We cannot be dependent on the whims of, who's going to be in control of the House of Representatives next year. Now, Alan Bailey, and a person I greatly admired, really believed that the government should pay for community radio because he said that's our taxpayer money. That was a core belief. And Alan spent his entire second term at KABU constantly on the phone to CPB people getting that grant restored. What do we have to do? This is how much we're doing. He was just working, working, working. His goal in life was to get CPB money restored to KABU because he thought that was right. That's the way it should be. What happened was wrong. Now, of course, it's a completely different scenario. This gang currently in power has just abolished CPB, just as they've abolished USAID. They've abolished, pick a name and a hat. They've abolished as many things that they think are not favorable to them or against their ideology of the people spending money to support the public good. So it's a different thing. But I still think one of the things we can do is just make an effort and reach out and try to tell people this, we have a story to tell, to tell people we really need you. Our survival and our independence depends on you renewing your membership. I used to tell people that wherever I went, I would talk to people and then they'd say, oh, I'm a KBOO member. And it always came out that they had been a KBOO member, but they hadn't contributed in a couple of years. I mean, their Portland is filled to the brim with people who believe they're KBOO members, and they are, they're KBOO supporters. We need them to send some money. We need them to send whatever they can spare, $20 a year, whatever you can afford, whatever contribution you can make. Now is the moment. I mean, in so many aspects of our life in this country right now, now is the moment. And it is if you see the value and the sense and the virtue of having KBOO still on the air, continuing. It's a much more complicated thing now. It was a whole different world back in 1998. I don't need to tell anybody that. But many people have so many options for how they get information, how they get news. But the Oregonian had a piece recently about, I think it was fire maps and how it got defeated because they didn't have good communications. And the article pointed out that in communities where radio stations and newspapers no longer exist, people turn to Facebook groups for their information. And we all know how Facebook works. You get to hear from people who agree with you. You don't get any other information that may make you question what you're being told by your Facebook group. So that's why KBOO and places like KBOO and OPB and all those places are so critically important. And their independence is vital. You know, if somebody's going to lean on you like they leaned on television networks and say, we really don't like that guy on late night TV, he's got to be gone. And the oligarchs who own corporate media are going to respond to that very quickly because they understand the negative consequences of disagreeing with these characters. Being oligarchs themselves, they understand how that works.
Right. And it seems like alternative community radio is more important today than ever, for those reasons, Gene. It seems to me there are fewer alternative sources of information. I mean, maybe to those of us who know how to seek it out, we can find many more alternative sources of information. But for people in the mid-1960s, when KBOO was started, at least people had access to labor union newspapers or other kinds of community groups, and there wasn't the kind of single or count on one hand the corporate media owners that now exist. There was a bit more diversity in sources in the mid-60s or even in the 1990s. So I think more than ever, it's important to have KBOO's voice on the air and also to preserve that space on the band so that it's not taken over by some right-wing radio source. And there are plenty of those if you travel outside of Portland on the AM and FM radio dials.
You know, when they FCC set that up, you know, the left side of the dial was reserved for local organizations, for community groups to have their local radio stations. And it's always been frustrating to people who believe in a quote unquote free market that they can't sell those. You know, that the role of government is to sell these franchises and make money. That wasn't the vision when they set this stuff up, and it shouldn't be the vision now. So yes, holding on to our place on that radio dial is very important. And lots of people over the last 25 years said, oh, people don't care about that. They have the internet. They can just do whatever they want. That's true. You can dial up Amy Goodman on the internet, but you're not going to get everything that KBOO has without a lot of looking, and a lot of stuff's not going to be there. You want to talk about police accountability in Portland, you might get people's opinions. You might get advocacy groups one way or the other. You may get something from the powers that be, but you're not going to get a journalistic look at what the facts are and what the different opinions are and how things are working. You're just not going to get that because there's no money in it.
And the KBOO Evening News provides such important information and voices that are missing from the Oregonian or Willamette Week or the local TV stations. Our local news team is, on a different kind of beat looking for those stories that are missing.
Yes, and they're looking for the story that's not told, the part of the story that's not told. Now, the Oregonian, goodness knows how many people work at the Oregonian anymore, but they don't even have time probably to go too deep. And since it's only about 15 pages, they don't have space to go too deep. KBOO has 24 hours a day, and thanks to volunteers, we have a lot of people to follow up on a lot of things. And that's a huge advantage that we've had during our whole existence. We can do things that more established news sources or community sources can't do. And volunteers make that possible.
Well, Gene Bradley, thank you so much for talking with us today
A
and
real
for
pleasure.
your many, many years of volunteer service to KABU.
I'm just one of so many people who have done so much to keep this place going. I'm in awe of them still. So thank you very much, Lori. It's been
Well,
a great
thank
pleasure.
yeah, thank you, Gene. So long.
Take care.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.